Each week, we intend to feature a logical fallacy segment. This is to take a look at politicians, media, and people in general, and the ways in which we twist logic to suit some aim. This week, we feature the special pleading.
Special pleading is a form of spurious argumentation where a position in a dispute introduces favorable details or excludes unfavorable details by alleging a need to apply additional considerations without proper criticism of these considerations themselves. Essentially, this involves someone attempting to cite something as an exemption to a generally accepted rule or a principle without justifying the exemption. The lack of criticism may be a simple oversight, for example, a reference to common sense or an application of a double standard. A more difficult case is when a possible criticism is made relatively immune to investigation. This immunity may take the form of reference to vocabulary that is owned by a distinct community with sole rights to assess meaning and application. For example, it was appropriate to torture back in 2002 because we thought the person we had was more valuable. In that scope, yes, I think it was appropriate. In the classic distinction among material, psychological, and logical fallacies, special pleading most likely falls within the category of psychological fallacy, as it would seem to relate to lip service, rationalization, and diversion, meaning abandonment of discussion. Special pleading also often resembles the appeal to logical fallacies. In philosophy, it is assumed that wherever a distinction is claimed, a relevant basis for the distinction should exist and be substantiated. Special pleading is a subversion of this assumption.
Thank you for listening to Veracity Radio. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Ali Soufan is the chief executive officer of the Soufan Group, LLC, an international strategic consultancy firm that advises governments and corporations on policy, strategy, security, risk management, and training. More significantly, for our purposes, he is a former FBI supervisory special agent who investigated and supervised highly sensitive and complex international terrorism cases, including the attack on the USS Cole and the events surrounding 9/11. Mr. Soufan has received numerous awards and commendations for his counterterrorism work. These include the director of the FBI's Award for Excellence in Investigation, the Respect for Law Enforcement Award for Relentless Pursuit of Truth and Bringing Terrorist Subjects Before the Bar of Justice, and a commendation from the U.S. Department of Defense that labeled him an important weapon in the ongoing war on terrorism. Mr. Soufan is an honors graduate from Mansfield University of Pennsylvania, where he received undergraduate degrees in international studies and political science. He is a magna cum laude graduate of Villanova University, where he received a Master of Arts in International Relations and appears to have no connection to the University of Virginia. Mr. Soufan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. I know that each one of you cares deeply about...
Could you speak up and clearly with the microphone near you so that everybody can hear? Without the ability to see you, it's even more important that you be heard.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. I know that each one of you cares deeply about our nation's security. It was always a comfort to me during the most dangerous situations that I faced, from going undercover as an Al-Qaeda operative to tracking down the killers of the 17 U.S. sailors murdered on the USS Cole, that those of us on the front line had your support and the backing of the American people. So I thank you. The issue that I'm here to discuss today, interrogation methods used to question terrorists, is not and should not be a partisan matter. We all share a commitment to using the best interrogation method possible to serve our national security interests and fits within the framework of our nation's principles. As an FBI agent, I spent much of my career investigating and unraveling terrorist cells around the globe. I have had the privilege of learning and working alongside some of the most dedicated and talented individuals from the FBI and other law enforcement, military, and intelligence agencies. I was the government's main witness in both trials we had in Guantanamo Bay so far, and I'm currently helping the prosecution prepare for future ones. From my experience, I strongly believe that it is a mistake to use what has become known as enhanced interrogation techniques, a position shared by professional operatives, including CIA officers who were present at the initial phases of the Abu Zubaydah interrogation. These techniques, from an operational perspective, are slow, ineffective, unreliable, and harmful to our efforts to defeat al-Qaeda. An example of a successful interrogation is that of al-Qaeda terrorist known as Abu Jandal. In the immediate aftermath of 9/11, together with my partner...
Let me interrupt just for one moment.
Sure.
Ask unanimous consent that the 302s that were developed in the investigation of Abu Jandal be made a part of the record. I believe this is the first time they've been fully declassified. Please proceed. Without objection.
In the immediate aftermath of 9/11, together with my partner, Special Agent Robert McFadden, first-class agent from the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, we obtained a treasure trove of highly significant actionable intelligence that proved instrumental in the war efforts against al-Qaeda and Taliban in the fall of 2001. It included extensive information on everything from Osama bin Laden's network and modus operandi to details on individual operatives, some we later apprehended. The approach we used was completely by the book, and it can be labeled as informed interrogation approach. It is outlined in the Army Field Manual and is derived from the cumulative experiences, wisdom, and successes of the most effective operatives from our country's military, intelligence, and law enforcement community. The approach is based on leveraging our knowledge of a detainee's mindset, vulnerabilities, and culture, together with using intelligence already known about him. The interrogator uses a combination of interpersonal, cognitive, and emotional strategies to extract the information needed. If done correctly, this approach works quickly and effectively because it outsmarts the detainee using a method that he is not trained nor able to resist. The Army Field Manual is not about being soft. It's about outwitting, outsmarting, and manipulating the detainee. The approach is in sharp contrast of the enhanced interrogation method that instead tries to subjugate the detainee into submission through humiliation and cruelty. The idea behind it is to force the detainee to see the interrogator as the master who controls his pain. It's merely an exercise in trying to force compliance rather than elicit cooperation. A major problem is it is ineffective. Al-Qaeda are trained to resist torture. As shocking as these techniques are to us, their training prepares them for much worse, the torture that they would receive if caught by dictatorships, for example. In a democracy, however, there is a glass ceiling the interrogator cannot breach, and eventually, the detainee will call the interrogator's bluff. That's why, as we see from the recently released DOJ memos on interrogation, the contractors had to keep requesting authorization to use harsher and harsher methods. In the case of Abu Zubaydah, that continued for several months, right till waterboarding was introduced. And waterboarding itself had to be used 83 times, an indication that Abu Zubaydah had already called his interrogator's bluff. In contrast, when we interrogated him using intelligent interrogation methods, within the first hour, we gained important actionable intelligence. The technique is also unreliable. We don't know whether the detainee is being truthful or just speaking to mitigate his discomfort. The technique is also slow. Waiting 180 hours as part of a sleep deprivation stage is time we cannot afford to waste in a ticking bomb scenario. Just as importantly, this amateurish technique is harmful to our long-term strategy and interests. It plays into the enemy's handbook and recreates a form of the so-called Chinese wall between the CIA and the FBI. It also taints sources, risks outcomes, ignores the end game, and diminishes our moral high ground. My interest in speaking about this issue is not to advocate the prosecution of anyone. Examining a past we cannot change is only worthwhile when it helps guide us towards claiming a future, a better future, that is yet within our reach. For the last 7 years, it has not been easy objecting to these methods when they had powerful backers. I stood up then for the same reasons I'm willing to take on critics now, because I took an oath swearing to protect this great nation. I could not stand by quietly while our country's safety is endangered and our moral standing damaged. I know you are motivated by the same considerations, and I hope you help ensure that these grave mistakes are never, never made again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Soufan. Let me, now that we're in the questioning period, begin with questions to you. And let me ask you more specifically about the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah. Again, reminding you not to divulge any information that is non-classified. You were present. Indeed, you were one of the first, if not the first, interrogators present when Abu Zubaydah was brought into custody for the first time outside of Pakistan, correct?
Yes, sir.
And your testimony indicates that within the first hour of your interrogation of him, you had gained important, actionable intelligence. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
At that point, his condition was such that you indicated that we had to take him to a hospital or he would die. But at the hospital, you continued your questioning. And it was during your questioning of him at the hospital that you elicited information regarding the previously unknown role of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed as the mastermind of the 9/11 attacks.
Correct, sir.
One of the more significant pieces of intelligence information we've ever obtained in the war on terror, correct?
It's one of them, yes, sir.
And all of this happened before the CIA CTC team and the private contractors arrived, correct?
Yes, sir.
And then they arrived. And immediately you say, on the instructions of the contractor, harsh techniques were introduced, which did not produce results as Abu Zubaydah shut down and stopped talking, correct?
Correct, sir.
And with that happening, you knew he had good information. He had shut down under the harsh techniques. And so you again were given control of the interrogation, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you used the same techniques you had originally, which were within the Army Field Manual.
Yes, sir. It's me, my another FBI agent who was with me, and a top CIA interrogator. So the interrogation team was a combination between FBI and CIA, and all of us had the same opinion that contradicted with the contractor.
And in this third interview, the one, or series of interviews anyway, but one before the hospital, one in the hospital, and then one after the first round of harsh interrogation when you were brought back, was in the second round, pursuant to appropriate tactics, that Abu Zubaydah disclosed the details of Jose Padilla, the so-called dirty bomber, correct?
Yes, sir.
And then, again, the contractor reasserted himself and began re-implementing harsh techniques. And again, Abu Zubaydah shut down and stopped producing information. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And once again, you were brought back in to interrogate him. Now it was more difficult because some of these harsh techniques had been applied and his resistance was increased. But eventually, you succeeded and you re-engaged again. But at that point, the contractor took over and began stepping up the notches of his experiment to the point where you protested to your superiors in the FBI that this was becoming inappropriate, illegal. I believe you even threatened to arrest somebody if you were to stay there, correct?
Yes, sir. My description was borderline torture.
And at that point, your participation in his interrogation ended.
Yes, we were asked by Director Mueller to leave the facility.
So when you look at the Office of Legal Counsel opinion of May 30th, 2005, on page 10, here's what the Office of Legal Counsel said was the fact. Interrogations of Zubaydah, again, once enhanced techniques were employed, furnished detailed information regarding al-Qaeda's organizational structure, key operatives, and modus operandi, and identified KSM as the mastermind of the September 11th attacks. You've informed us that Zubaydah also provided significant information on two operatives, including Jose Padilla, who planned to build and detonate a dirty bomb in the Washington, D.C. area, end quote. From your position at the actual interrogation of Abu Zubaydah, you know that statement not to be true.
Yes, sir.
On September 6, 2006, President Bush stated the following. Within months of September 11, 2001, we captured a man named Abu Zubaydah. We believe that Zubaydah was a senior terrorist leader and a trusted associate of Osama bin Laden. Zubaydah was severely wounded during the firefight that brought him into custody, and he survived only because of the medical care arranged by the CIA. After he recovered, Zubaydah was defiant and evasive. He declared his hatred of America. During questioning, he at first disclosed what he thought was nominal information, and then stopped all cooperation. We knew that Zubaydah had more information that could save innocent lives, but he stopped talking. As his questioning proceeded, it became clear that Zubaydah had received training on how to resist interrogation, and so the CIA used an alternative set of procedures. Does that statement by the president accurately reflect the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah?
Well, the environment that he's talking about, yes, it reflects, you know, he was injured and he needed medical care. But I think the president, my own personal opinion here, based on my recollection, he was told probably half-truth.
And repeated a half-truth, obviously. His statement as presented does not conform with what you know to be the case from your experience on hand.
Yes, sir.
I'm over my time. Senator Graham.
Well, since there's just the two of us, if you want to keep going. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we've got is four lawyers who are very bright, all have one thing in common. They like Virginia. And I counted seven opinions among you. I think two of you disagree with yourselves somewhere along the line. And the point is that you're very bright. I appreciate you coming. And Mr. Zufan, thank you for serving our country.
Thank you, sir.
And I appreciate your view of how we should behave. The point that we're trying to make is as we go forward is that we get this right. And as we look back in the past, we don't want to shade this one way or the other unnecessarily. Is it your testimony that enhanced interrogation techniques that were employed right after 9/11 yielded no good information?
I can only speak about my own personal experience.
And that's the point, isn't it?
Yes.
And I admire you. I really do. I really appreciate what you're doing. And, Ms. Chairman, I think there's some information out there that shows that enhanced interrogation techniques did yield good information. And I would like that to be part of this inquiry if we're going to have it. But having said that, Mr. Zufan, I appreciate what you're telling us. Were you involved in the KSM interrogation at all?
No, sir. After my stand in the Abu Zubaydah and stand what I believed is right.
I don't doubt that at all. And I don't doubt that you're trying to help the country. I'm just saying that this idea that no good information was acquired is probably not accurate. That doesn't justify what we did. That's all I'm saying.
One other question I wanted to pursue about the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah. There was obviously considerable conflict between one side that was achieving significant actionable information. I mean, so significant that when the Jose Padilla information became available, as I recall, the Attorney General of the United States had a press conference in Moscow to trumpet it. And the other method, which was producing a shutdown, if you will, on the part of the detainee. And it has been often cast as the difference between the trained professionals of the CIA versus the amateurish military interrogators, teenagers who need the Army Field Manual sort of for their training wheels, and law enforcement investigators who are constrained by Miranda and other things and therefore can't be serious interrogators. It strikes me from your description that two elements of that framing of the issue are wrong. First of all, seems very well that military and law enforcement investigators are actually the trained professionals. You refer to the other group as amateurish Hollywood type. And the second is that the division wasn't between the CIA and the FBI. You had CIA professionals who were with you and wanted to continue, and on the other side of the equation was a private contractor who was not even a government employee. Could you comment on those observations?
Yes, sir. It has been reported that it was a conflict during the interrogation between the FBI and CIA. I totally disagree with this assertion. And that's something that I mentioned in
at the field level, at least.
In the field
at the point of the interrogation, yes.
Yes. And that's why I supported the CIA officers in my op-ed in the New York Times on this issue. They were 100% supportive. Actually, the chief psychologist of the CIA, forensic psychologist, objected to these techniques, and he even left the location before I did. Their top interrogator was 100%, I think, in sync with our view, with the FBI view, because he's a professional interrogator. I think this technique, using the harsh methods or using the enhanced interrogation methods, misunderstand the threat that we face from ideological Islamic extremists like Al-Qaeda and countries around the world, in the Middle East, who actually use these techniques as regularly as possible, peddled away from these techniques when it comes to the terrorists of Al-Qaeda and Islamic extremists. They are ideologically motivated. They are expecting a lot to happen to them when they get caught. And the best way to do with them is to be smart and to engage with them. And that's what provided a lot of actionable intelligence before 9/11 and after 9/11. And, in a classified session, we can actually talk about a lot of the successes versus the failures of these techniques. I mean, one of the things that mentioned or have been mentioned about this technique, the successes that have been talked about publicly are Padilla and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Well, waterboarding was not approved until August 1st, 2002. Padilla, after an international manhunt in three countries, was finally arrested after he landed from Switzerland to the Chicago airport on May 8, 2002, almost 3 months before these techniques were imposed. We knew about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in April of 2002. Again, waterboarding was not approved until August 1st of 2002. So I am basing my opinion here from two things. From my recollection of the facts. I don't have any notes. I'm just having my memory on these facts and what happens.
Understood.
That's number one. And number two, I am basing on what I've been hearing in the public domain, what have been classified.
I'm going to turn to... stands for the proposition that it's torture for law enforcement to ever question a suspect in a hospital.
My opinion is that Stevens was wrong, but I'm just saying that's what Stevens' opinion was.
You think it stands for the proposition that Stevens would oppose any interrogation of any criminal defendant in a hospital?
That's what he said in his opinion, page 10 of my testimony.
Can I respond, please, to some of those assertions? First, the timeline that was criticized before. The memo
we'll let you explain, but I got a few questions, and you can say anything you want because you're a great American.
You.
Now, about the CIA, about the interrogation of this suspect, do you know a gentleman named John Kiriakou?
Myself? The question? No, I don't know him.
Okay, he gave an interview He's a retired CIA officer, and he said, Abu Sabeda, is that the guy's name?
Yes.
Did I say it right? He said that they waterboarded the guy, and he broke within 35 seconds.
Is this question for me, sir?
Yes.
Well, last week he retracted that, and he said he was misinformed, and actually okay. he was not at the Abu Zubaydah location.
Okay, so he's he just...
He retracted that, yes, sir. Okay. That's one of the things that was mentioned before.
Right, right.
And now we know it's 83 times, not okay. 35 seconds.
Now, do you believe that any good information was obtained through harsh interrogation techniques? Can you say that there was no good information?
Well, from what I know on the Abu Zubaydah, I would like you to evaluate the information that we got before.
Well, the vice president suggesting that there was good information obtained, and I'd like the committee to get that information. Let's have both sides of the story here. I mean, one of the reasons these techniques have survived for about 500 years is apparently they work.
Because, sir, there's a lot of people who don't know how to interrogate, and it's right. easy to hit somebody than outsmart them.
I understand that you believe you got it right, and you know how to do it, and these other people don't. I understand. I understand that. In many ways, I agree with you. But this idea that you're the complete knowledge of what happened in terms of interrogation techniques and what was gained is not accurate. Your testimony is not a complete repository of what happened during these interrogation techniques of high-value targets. There are other interrogations going on, and there's an allegation made that these interrogations yielded information that protect Americans. If we're going to talk about it, let's talk about it in complete terms.
And to be fair to the witness, Senator, I think he hasn't represented himself more than somebody who can correct.
I mentioned my own personal experience.
That arose
right.
from
and,
the
and I have nothing but the highest regard for this gentleman. I just know this is not it. This is not the whole story. And the point is, do we need to keep doing this? I think we've cleaned up this mess. We've got it right, generally speaking. And the more we get into this, the more we're going to make it chilling for the next group of people who are asked to do to defend this nation. And that leads me in my last question. Do you believe it would be wrong for President Obama to authorize a technique outside the Army field manual if the CIA told him they had a high-value target that they believe possesses information about an imminent attack?
I believe that they should ask other professional interrogators to evaluate
I'm telling you,
that detainee.
Do you believe that the CIA, do you think Leon Panetta is qualified for his job?
Well, I believe he's extremely qualified for his job.
I'm going to read something to you.
If we're going to get into the qualifications of Panetta.
Yeah, this is important, though.
Right.
Ron Wyden asked him, if person has critical threat information, urgent information, and you need to be able to secure that information, he asked Panetta, what would you do? In that particular situation that you mentioned, where you have someone who could be a ticking time bomb, and it's absolutely necessary to find out what information that individual has, I think we would have to do everything possible within the law to get that information. If we had a ticking time bomb situation, obviously whatever was being used I felt was not sufficient, I would not hesitate to go to the President of the United States and request whatever additional authority I would need, but obviously I would again state that I think this President would do nothing that would violate the laws that were in place. Having said
that... Wrap it up. I'm sorry.
Huh? Okay, wrap it up. Would the President of the United States, President Obama, be wrong in considering a request from the CIA to engage in interrogation techniques beyond the field manual, but that yet were lawful?
Sir, from the quote that you read, the key word in it from Director Panetta, within the law. Within the law,
right.
Yes, the President can authorize whatever.
Is the Army field manual the complete law on what is lawful?
No, it's an outline for interrogation.
Thank you.